interest? Have you any declarations of interest? No. You can declare them when the paper comes up if necessary. The minutes of the previous meeting, the 26th of February. We happy they're a correct record? Agreed. Any matters arising that are not covered? No. Okay then. Move on to the public reports, item 5.1, inspection of Hawthorne Family Learning Centre. Head of Children's Services, Maria. No, Joan, sorry.
It's okay, Jim. Good morning, everyone. As you can see, Hawthorne Family Learning Centre had an unannounced inspection in November 2018. And as you can see from the results, they once again received an excellent in relation to care and support, which, can I just say, this is the 10th year in a row that this has been awarded, and very good for the environment. These were the only two areas that they inspected at this moment in time. The Family Learning Centre, as members know, is a registered care service for a maximum of 48 children aged between birth and 8 years of age, and also offers an outreach services to families within their own home. The main purpose of the service is to work with the most vulnerable children within our communities in partnership with parents and carers. The centre also works with quite a large amount of children with severe and complex needs, and clearly does an excellent job based on the findings from the care inspectorate once again. Just a brief overview in relation to some of the many positives that were identified. That, you know, this a considerable strength of the experienced and well-qualified staff team was their ability to work together, sharing the joint goals of supporting children to reach their potential and of empowering families, which is hugely you know, invaluable when we're working with families who often choose not to come into our centre, but the work that the staff do often engages them really, really well, so that they do turn up. Staff had built strong positive attachments with children, and care was taken to ensure that when children moved into and from the service, this was done with full regard for their specific needs and was not rushed, contributing to children feeling secure and confident. Staff were kind and caring in all their interactions with children, which helped the very young children to experience a sense of achievement and self-worth. I could go on and on, but the report's there for you to read. There's a huge amount of positive comments within it. Like all inspections, they have to find something that they want to comment on. So I think they were in the middle of Evelyn, the way they were doing up the two-year-old rooms, and obviously it wasn't quite complete, so they had to make a wee comment about the finishing touches being done, which obviously are now done. So so what we're asking today, obviously, from the recommendations, is to note the content of the inspection report, pass this to a performance review and scrutiny committee for its consideration, to congratulate the management and the staff connected with Hawthorne Family Learning Centre on the excellent work being carried out. And one that I did forget, because I didn't know at that time when I wrote the report, is to congratulate Evelyn Brown-Wright, who's sitting next to me, who's been with Midlothian Council for 40 years and has been the manager for the last however many years, and who retires tomorrow. So just to obviously show her appreciation and thanks very much. Okay, and I'm happy to take any questions if anybody's got any.
Thank you, an absolutely excellent report. Does anybody have any questions for Vic?
Thanks, Jim. I mean, this is an outstanding report, and it's not questions, but I was looking at 2.4, and there seem to be a number of key points here which show us why this is an outstanding inspection. Joan has already alluded to the experienced and well-qualified staff. That's absolutely crucial. The fact that the sharing of joint goals is obviously a good teamwork going on in there. The fourth bullet point, I thought staff respect for children and supporting their independence is obviously crucial with these youngsters who have very, very many needs. And finally, a thing that really I thought was important were the words kind and caring. And this led to a sense of achievement and self-worth, which is so important for these youngsters. I think the leadership and the staff in this particular institution must be outstandingly congratulated, and it makes fantastic reading. Thank you.
I think that's absolutely everybody in the room here today. And at the end of the day, a report like this is a result of a team effort, but outstanding leadership is vital in this scenario as well. And as Jones said, Evelyn Brown-Wright is the person who's managed this for a number of years and is retiring tomorrow. So I've just got a few words I want to say about you, Evelyn. I hope that's okay. Just a wee bit of background. After leaving high school, Evelyn worked in the Church of Scotland bookshop in George Street in Edinburgh. She studied at Esk Valley College from 1977 to 1979 and gained her SNED certificate on the 1st of July 1979. She started work in Hawthorne Centre in 1979 and she took up a post as a nursery officer based in the baby room, I believe. And the days before Evelyn learnt to drive, her mode of transport to get to her work was with a pit bus, I believe. everyone enjoyed her time in working in the baby room, giving support to many children and their families. And Evelyn has spoken fondly about working within the baby room, along with Jinty Burnett, who was incidentally my next door neighbour for many, many years. And has lots of memories of changing nappies. At the time, that was Terry Towling nappies, so you can imagine the amount of effort that was required at lunchtime when the bairns were getting their feed. Throughout our time at Hawthorne, Evelyn's became senior nursery officer in 1990 and then in 2009 became the unit manager. Evelyn's always said that being a manager involves many roles, but she would never ask anybody to do a job that she wasn't prepared to tackle herself. I believe in the winter time you would frequently see Evelyn keeping fit by running after the gritting lorries, asking them if they would kindly come back to clear the paths and enable the children and their families to get to the centre safely. She also has given other managers good words of advice, like mind and keep the men and women sweet, i.e. offer them a cup of tea. However, I understand that on occasion Evelyn could take a more confrontational role and become quite assertive when she thought that actions may be detrimental to the centre, like the delivery man that she asked not to come down the road in his lorry because it was too big. And after he took half the fence away, I think that it would be inappropriate to repeat what Evelyn said to the driver. She also enjoyed getting into the spirit of things, especially at Halloween, I'm told. As many times she could be seen doing the staff briefings in the morning, dressed in her witch's outfit, and also get others into the swing of things. At Christmas, you would also often fail to recognise her as the unit manager as she turned up dressed in the guise of some celebrity, like Sharon Osbourne, Lady Gaga, or Hilda Ogden from Coronation Street. That takes us back a bit. Throughout her career as manager, she's had to be referee and peacemaker, and that's just with the staff, I believe. But seriously, 40 years, Evelyn has been a great support to the children and their families in that area, the ones that have attended Hawthorne, and also been a great role model to all the staff team that she's worked with within the centre and will be greatly missed. I was actually going to say that what a fitting way to end your career in Hawthorne, getting such a good report, until I actually looked back and saw that was a consistent thing all the way back. So for all your effort for all these years, Evelyn, thank you on behalf of Midlothian Council. And if you just want to come up, I've got a wee... Cheerio. So we agree to the recommendations of that report then? Yeah. Item 5.2 is the school session dates for the academic year 2021. It's you this time, Maria.
Thanks, Councillor Muirhead. I think my report's going to be a bit dull in comparison to the last one now. So this is about the proposed session dates for the academic year 2021. Just to say, consultation has been undertaken with the appropriate teaching unions, schools and parent councils to draw up a scheme of session dates, and that's in Appendix 1 of the report. Important to say that these dates now coincide with both Edinburgh and East Lothian, so we've managed to kind of align them, which I think is helpful in terms of the holiday dates. The only date that is out is the Midlothian closure for summer, which is now Thursday the 1st of July, and Edinburgh and East Lothian are the 2nd of July. And the reasoning behind that is that Edinburgh take Victoria Day and we use it as an in-service day, so there's just one difference in us. So we're not out by much, so I think we've done pretty well. And so therefore we're asking for Cabinet to recommend to agree to the school session dates for 2021 as set out in the appendix. Thank you.
Thanks, Maria. Can I just ask a question? I understand that part of the teacher settlement is that there would be two extra in-service days for 1920. We're talking here about 2021, but in the current session, there's the requirement to add two additional service days. How are we're going to handle that?
Councillor Muirhead, yes, there's a request requirement under the settlement to look at 1920. There's also a request within that to look at it within the regional collaboratives as well. So we're having an ongoing conversation at the moment. We've already consulted actually via the 2021 on it to get some suggestions coming in on the in-service days. We haven't had much response apart from the head teacher secondaries. So we've put it to head teacher primary exec and we're taking it forward in a regional improvement collaborative to try to look at where it would fit, because it's quite short notice in terms of parents, and I think that's the issue for me. It's not necessarily the issue for the schools per se, it's issues for parents in terms of leave, etc. So that's ongoing at the moment, and I'll report back on that in due course.
Thanks for that. Anybody else got any questions? John?
It was just to check that the support staff unions were consulted as well.
Yes, all unions were consulted on it and with staff, but we have had responses, but there's been nothing kind of negative coming back because they're aligned and, to be fair, they're similar to last year. So that's kind of, I think, one of the things we might look at going forward is Edinburgh align them over a couple of years. So it may be something that we'll consider. So we'll go back and have a look at that. East Lothian at the moment don't, but I just wonder if rather than bring it back every year, that we actually might look at something going forward for a few years. But that would be obviously up to yourselves to maybe put in the recommendations as a suggestion. Don't know.
On the consultation exercise, we do. I understand it's quite a time-consuming exercise to go through, and I'm aware that some other councils have a 2 or 3 year kind of plan that they have to consult on once, and then you know that's it kind of thing. Is that we're going to look at that?
I think for us it would be helpful, Jim, and I think now that we're getting obviously any additional requests that come in, as they have done, we can't really do anything about the 1920, we just have to take and work with. But I think going forward, I think it helps families to plan, it helps staff with planning, and it helps us with setting in service days for the longer term as well. So I would be quite keen to look at it if that was a possibility.
John?
Yeah, I'd be quite supportive of that. I think it makes sense to get as far in advance as we can. At risk of arguing against myself, how often do these sort of last minute changes need to be made to the academic year? Is that just part of the pay negotiations year after year?
Not normally. The last additional in-service days were for Curriculum for Excellence, which, to be fair, we had quite a lot of warning for. So this has been kind of one that's just come up because of this year's situation. So I don't expect that there'll be further scenarios where we have to look at additional in-service days. So I think we can quite safely plan ahead, and then we deal with it if we have to.
Okay. So we agree the recommendations. We look forward to additional information on how we're going to incorporate the two additional in-service days. You're going to come back to us in terms of the possibilities of consulting or introducing a three-year kind of programme going forward. Yeah, everybody happy with that? Or longer, depends what they come back with. Okay, right, thank you for that. Item 5.3, early learning childcare expansion update and admissions policy.
Thank you, Councillor Muirhead. This report is to provide an update on progress with expansion in early learning and childcare to the 1140 hours, to advise on an increase in early rate paid to funded providers, and to advise that Council becoming a signatory to the National Position Statement on Outdoor Learning, and also to recommend a change in the Council's admission policy with effect from the academic year 1920, so that children born between March and August become entitled to a place from August. The councillors will also be aware that there was a previous briefing that took place in that, so hopefully people are feeling quite updated. I do have Magnus here to answer any detailed questions, so I might default to him when you come back to me. And I request that Cabinet accept the recommendations, which is to note the progress towards the implementation of the expansion to 1140 hours of early learning and childcare, note the increase in hourly rate for 3- and 4-year-old 600-hour places at funded provider settings and childminders to £4.50 from August 2019, and to revise admission policy to the hybrid model with effect from academic year 2019-20, as stated in the recommendations, and to note that Midlothian Council have become a signatory to Scotland's Outdoor Play and Learning Coalition position statement, and to pass this report to Council for noting.
Okay, open up to discussion. In the first instance, Maria, I was at COSLA, Children and Young People's Group at COSLA on Friday, and I raised a concern that I have as far as the funding's concerned. When we originally put our bid in for funding for this programme, I think we were asking for around about 17 point odd million, and I think we revised that down slightly to 16 point odd based on our own population projections and some pretty detailed and accurate information. My understanding is the Scottish Government have awarded that monies, and it's somewhere in the region of 13.5 million. And part of the reason for that is because they're using the NRS projections, which are kind of estimates about people moving, where they'll move to and from, and things like that. And we believe only as accurate as ours now. When this was reported back to the Council and Cabinet in the past, and the briefings that we've had, the Council was kind of hanging its hat on the fact that there would be annual reviews to this, and that would be the vehicle for addressing any discrepancies in terms of the estimates versus the actuals. Now, this was further compounded, by the way, when we were told back in May that for the first period we were getting, I think it was 7 million, Maria, correct me if I'm wrong, and the actual monies that we got in December were about 400,000 short of what we had been told and that we were getting in the May when the agreement was reached. I have some concerns about, given the monies that the government are going to have to find to fund the teachers' pay award, if there's going to be additional resources available to redress any issues, you know, and I think that's a concern. When I raised this at COSLA on Friday, that a number of other councils shared, and I know that East Lothian have got particular concerns in that respect as well. I think they're something like £4 million short of what they are requiring for this purpose as well. You know, so you know, while we're all committed to the early years and we're ploughing ahead to reach the deadlines that are placed on us, it's going to be pretty difficult if there is no adequate funding there. So I just want to raise this issue and just get if there's any feedback for the officers or anything that any of my colleagues want to say about that.
Thanks, Councillor Muirhead. I think what you say is correct. We did put in for more funding. We didn't receive that. At the moment, the letter, I think for us, the more imminent issue for us is the fact that in December, we were £400,000 short in what we expected. I can say to you at this point that Magnus and Julie Fox, the early years senior manager, is chasing this up with the Scottish Government to try and get some reasoning, because the letter didn't explain the change. So we are trying to get some information in writing, and I think that's probably why it was raised at COSLA. So we are actually pursuing that and taking it forward at the moment, because any shortfall in money for us will affect us achieving the early years expansion. And as you can see from the report, we are on target for August 2019 to achieve 41% of our target, which is really good, because I think the expectation from Scottish Government is 40%. So actually we're a wee bit above that. So we really don't want this to slow down. We're now in our pilot, you know, phase four of the pilot, so we're really kind of doing well, and there's lots of work happening in this, so really we're dependent in the monies, so we're pursuing that around with the senior officers. I don't know if Magnus wants to add anything.
Right, I accept what you're saying about the 400,000 being the more immediate concern, because it's for the first period, but I think we also need to get some clarity from government about whether there will be additional monies available should there be discrepancies in the estimates in terms of the population growth, etc., that are affecting how much we are getting. So I think we need to ask, officers need to pursue that as well as the issue of the 400,000. Everybody quite happy with that? Russell?
Thanks, Chair. I think it's maybe just looking a little bit further ahead of this, and if there is going to be a funding shortfall, then we should actually be flagging that up by way of a report, because clearly we are not going to be able to meet the kind of targets that we've set ourselves. And you know, if you've not got the money, you can't carry out either the work or indeed the recruitment. So it would be quite good if we could actually get an up-to-date position when we get an answer from the civil servants regarding the shortfall, but also to look at the bigger picture, because clearly it may be that we're going to have to say, well, we can't actually meet the targets that we've set ourselves, because we only set our targets on the basis of the funding. If that isn't going to be there, or all of it's not going to be there, then surely we should actually get a report coming back to us, and it can even come direct to the council just to explain where we are in the process. So I would like to see that, Chair.
Can you respond to that?
Yeah, I agree. We can bring a report back once we get a kind of fuller response to you. So that will be quite a short report, but a full report in terms of how it's going to affect us in terms of our implementation. No problem.
Thanks, Jim. On a similar vein, I think the workforce issues are a concern. And I recall information released by Unison late last year, early this year, that showed the number of future vacancies versus the number of those going to college really don't add up, and they're, you know, not anywhere near close. Mm. So as part of that report, if it'd be possible to get an update as well on workforce matters as well.
Okay, yep.
Happy to do that. If you want to include it in the recommendations, then we're happy to take that forward and give you a report on both the funding, the shortfall, and what we need in terms of our targets going forward, and then obviously the workforce.
We're happy to agree these recommendations with that. Sorry, Vic.
Thanks, Jim. I mean, this to me is one of a series of very helpful reports that we've had over a number of years now, and they're very clearly showing the progress that's being made. Could I just raise one or two issues? First of all, it's good to see the progress that we have made with this 41%. That makes very healthy reading. If there is a revenue shortfall, I would have a question, is there also a capital spend shortfall likely to be rejected? That's my question. On more minor issues, on 3.5, I would appreciate some information about the modern apprentices training as to how that's taking place. I presume it's been done at Edinburgh College. There has been reference to this in the past. And finally, I'm delighted to see that there are going to be two council outdoor learning areas. I mean, I often feel we've got a fantastic resource, particularly in Vogery, and how much use we make of it. Again, I would appreciate a wee bit more information on the nature of this really very positive and innovative development. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Vic. Maria?
Vic, can we maybe offer you a briefing, maybe with Magnus, etc., to talk you through some of these things? because I think the recommendations will include in the workforce will include the modern apprenticeships, etc. But if we have a briefing for Vic and Elizabeth, if you would like it, then that would maybe be helpful for a one-on-one to talk you through some of the things that are developing.
Well, that'd be helpful. Yep, good. John.
Thanks. I was going to leave this for another time, but I'll ask just with the centre at Vogre, which I think is a great development as well, but my concern is it would only be accessible to those with cars, and then therefore people from maybe more deprived families wouldn't be able to access that service. And it's just wondering if there are plans to put on transport.
So John, what service are you talking about? I didn't catch what you said there.
Sorry, I'm just consulting, can you tell on that one? That was my consultation going on there. I've been well informed that for the areas of deprivation, we're going to bus the children in, okay? So, you know, your areas of deprivation at Lawfield, etc., we'll be bussing the children in the first instance, and then we'll develop it from there. So we're looking at, you know, we're taking into all these options into account, okay?
I think just it's worth pointing out as well, though, when we were talking earlier on about recruitment, colleagues, that we did approach Scottish Government to see, because we were quite quick off the mark here in terms of getting the recruitment going, and we asked Scottish Government for to be able to draw down some of the funding earlier to enable us to get going with that as quick as possible, and they declined that to happen, telling us to take it for reserves. I think that was quite disappointing that happened, because we could have been just that maybe that wee bit further on with these things. Given that we understand how difficult it's going to be to recruit the sufficient staff to carry out these additional hours. But anyway, right, so agree the recommendations as per, and with a couple of amendments that have been put in. We now move on to 5.4, Procurement and Commercial Improvement Programme. Kevin.
Thanks, Chair. This report is in relation to the Procurement and Commercial Improvement Programme, which replaced the former Procurement Capability Assessment, although the emphasis remains on best practice and continuous improvement. And the new format is detailed in sections 2.2 and 2.3 of the report and considered to be more challenging in its objectives. Whilst the PCIP is not a mandatory requirement, it is being used to address our aims of supporting local economy to grow in the social value of community benefits and in the best value through contract and supplier management, as had been agreed by Council last August in our procurement strategy and the Council's annual procurement report. The PCIP assessment for Midlothian, as appended to the report, took place in December and achieved a score of 66%, which was an improvement on the 2016-17 score of 61% and places us now in the second level of banding. Cabinet has recommended in Section 5 to note the Council's PCIP assessment and to refer the report to Audit Committee, and if I may also suggest that members add to the recommendations in referring this to the PRS Committee to ensure the current profile for procurement is maintained. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin. Any questions or comments on this report? Stephen.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Kevin. Kevin, I'm just going to draw on my own experience of having gone through recently the procurement process with Edinburgh Council. And my personal experience, they've incorporated, I think East Lothian is the same now, they've incorporated a community benefits requirement within their procurement strategy. And I'm just wondering if that's something that we've considered or it's something you're aware of. I think, for more personal point of view, if your income from a particular contract exceeds £50,000, there is an absolute requirement for that operator or contractor to provide some payback to the community, whether that be financial, whether that be in hours, for example, a litter pick at a school. There's an absolute requirement there for that, and I'm just wondering if that's something that we're considering.
Yes, you're absolutely right in terms of the values that are ascribed there. Certainly, we have embedded community benefits and sustainability into our tendering processes. That has resulted today in new apprenticeships and subcontracted opportunities for local businesses, too, to help reduce our carbon footprint in addition to that, too. We've also supported the local economy, as there's been a shift from our local spend of 13% in 16-17 to 18% in 17-18. So, yes, we are addressing those very points.
Any other comments? John?
It's probably more a comment than a question, Jim, and it was, I think as our ability to influence spending is limited now and the council's, you know, resources tighten up, procurement is one of those few areas where we can, do have some levers that we could influence policy on the ground. And I'm just wondering, I don't know if we need a report, but it might be good for us, I think, as an administration to have a discussion and maybe look at, you know, what can be achieved through procurement and maybe look at some of the areas other local authorities yeah. are using that we're not.
Yeah, point taken. And right, okay, I agree that you need to respond to that.
But it was just to pick up, I think it was yourself that raised that very point to audit committee, and there is a piece of work in relation to that activity ongoing.
Thanks for that. Okay, agree the recommendations with the addition to refer the report to the PRS. Agreed. Thank you. Okay, item 5.5, New Build Council Housing Local Letting Initiative, and that is Alistair.
Thanks, Chair. So I'm joining my colleague Stephen Clark as well. So paper before really just kind of sets out the proposed local letting initiative to be used for the allocation of housing at Woodburn Terrace in Dalkeith. 2.1 just set out the background to the revision to the housing allocation policy back in 2016. The local letting initiatives, we'll need to find a better name for that, that I can say in one go if that's okay, developed for each new build as we kind of progress through. There are 10 properties that will become available, and 2.5 sets out the priorities that we'll be giving and how the allocation will be done. So first allocation to existing council house tenants who are on the general needs list and are resident in Dalkeith area, and then through to allocate to homeless and general need list applicants who have chosen Dalkeith as one of their area choices, thus ensuring that the total allocations target 60% of the homes at this development are allocated to households who are resident in Dalkeith as of March 2019. So that's the proposal in front and asking for support from Cabinet for this local letting initiative.
Thanks, Alistair. Stephen?
Thanks, Alistair. Great to see we've got another 10 houses coming into our council stock in the coming months. Mm-hmm. And also encouraged to see the local letting initiatives continue giving greater weight to local residents in the area in which the houses are being built. So, yep, welcome this.
Thank you. Agree the recommendations? Agreed. Thank you. Moving on to the Midlothian Active Travel Strategy. Director of Resources, Kevin.
Thanks, Chair. The report seeks agreement for the Midlothian Active Travel Strategy, which is included as an appendix and was subject to full public consultation through a range of channels as detailed in section 2.2. Active travel predominantly involves walking and cycling opportunities, and the strategy also focuses on the environment and road safety measures to facilitate this. Consequently, the strategy aims to collaborate with developers on new walking and cycling routes to integrate into our existing network by increasing access, and provides a framework for support and improvements in health and well-being, congestion and pollution effects through the Associated Action Plan, which links into the regional and local policies such as the Single Midlothian Plan, the Local Development Plan and Green Network. And Cabinet is recommended to adopt the strategy. Thank you.
Questions or comments, Russell?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Just a question to the Director. I was quite happy with the report up until I got an email through yesterday that was actually questioning the report about the active travel strategy and the Green Network Plan and how they don't mirror each other. And I just wondered, is there a reason for that?
Certainly, yes. I mean, I know I referenced that it links to the Green Network, but it doesn't align to the Green Network strategy, and that's because the Green Network is essentially supplementary guidance, including leisure paths. Ours are at a strategic level there, There's also the objectives have a different timeline in terms of delivery, and the Green Network has a wider remit relative to biodiversity and water management and leisure in parks, whereas ours is more travel focused, clearly. If there's concerns about that in terms of the mapping, we could make minor amendments to reflect the areas concerned. But yes, it doesn't, as I say, align directly to the Green Network. It doesn't aim to do so.
Russell? Yeah, thanks very much for that. And, you know, I don't know if we need an amendment. Kevin's explained that, and it's quite clear to see that there's a Green Network strategy and an active travel strategy. The one thing I do have a question on is how do we fund it?
Kevin?
Yeah, the strategy isn't a bid for resources. It's to support those that would become available through other opportunities and avenues, but not directly funded by the local authority.
John? Thanks, Jim. I think that's it's an important point, because I'm reflecting on a piece of correspondence we had from one of our local MSPs who said, you know, despite our increasing population, there was more than enough infrastructure to go around for everybody. And I just don't believe it. You know, when I first moved here, you could leave for work at 7:30, 7:45, and easily get in for 8:30. Anyone leaving for work now to get into Edinburgh at 7 o'clock, you're looking 8:30, 8:45. You know, the number of contacts and pressures we had from spokes and other organisations looking to improve our connectivity, and rightly so. And it is a shame that our only lever on this occasion, on this, is funding applications and using the development as it comes into the county as an opportunity to make some changes. But thank you very much for the report, and thanks to the public who fed into this. Nick?
Thanks, Jim. If I could focus on the leisure and the active part of this report, because I obviously don't have the knowledge of our elected members here. I think what this report demonstrates is how lucky we are to live in Midlothian, that we have so many, with all due respect, free resources, whether it's walking, cycling, just walking along rivers, fishing, all sorts of things. And I think I would hope that this report will get a lot of publicity in all of our schools, both primary and secondary, as well as obviously through social media and the libraries, as I referred to here, because this really does make good reading. I know I value the fact that I can walk out of my house and go for a walk in the woods, and so many people in Midlothian can do that, which they can't do in the larger cities. So we are dead lucky to live here. And I think, just an observation, I worried at one stage with all the new housing going up as to whether some of these paths would be blocked off. Well, there have been one or two minor changes, but the answer is no. We still can cycle vast distances, walk vast distances, and enjoy our countryside. So I think everybody involved in this report should be congratulated. I hope it gets as much publicity as possible in our schools and with all of our population. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks for these words. John?
I completely agree with Vic. One thing I would just highlight, though, if you spoke to the Land and Countryside manager, he wouldn't be saying that the paths and everything are free. So, you know, they do take quite a lot of work to maintain, and
I meant free by the users. Once you've watched one's words. Thank you.
Yeah, we're not going to start charging yet. Right. Okay, then agree to endorse and accept the report. Yep. Thank you. That's the meeting for today's agenda. Thanks for your attendance.